Hello and welcome to Retold, Classics Given New Life, the show that recounts the tales that define storytelling for generations. I'm your host, John Beverly, an English major and struggling writer with a passion for the past. On today's episode, we will be breaking down the story that quite possibly created the science fiction genre as we know it today, Frankenstein, written by Mary Shelley. Before we begin, please note that everything said in this retelling is rewritten by the crew here at Retold. None of this is actual quotes from the book, and as such, we recommend you still read the novel to get the full experience, as we simply wish to embody the spirit of the original story. We begin our journey listening to the letters between an adventurer by the name of Robert Walton and his sister Margaret. Margaret, I do hope this letter finds you well. There is so much I wish to inform you about my expedition. Our passage towards the north has gone most smoothly. We may have come across various troubles, but what journey doesn't? That's the reason why I adventure, of course. All the men along with me on my quest are excellent. They truly are the cream of the crop, the best around. You can feel safe that your dear brother will return to you in the same condition in which he left him. Sincerely, your dear brother Robert. Dear Margaret, I know it's been only days since my prior letter, but there is so much that has happened in such a small period of time. I simply must tell someone about it. First off, we have arrived in the Arctic Circle, and we show no sign of slowing down. But this is not where the truly remarkable part of my adventure lies, as we have come across two rather strange travelers. One of which is a rather tall fellow. He was in a sled pulled by dogs. While in and of itself not very interesting, I grow wary of any man able to survive such a climate with what appears to be relative ease. He showed no signs of slowing down and shall absolutely beat us to the North Pole. That is, if we share a destination, of course. The second traveler we found seems to have some sort of connection to this Arctic giant. We found a second man on another sled, freezing to death. None of us wished to see this man perish in such a horrid way. As such, we brought him aboard our vessel. We all wish to hear this man's story, however, this is a tale we will have to wait on, as the man has little strength. Not even enough to muster a thank you for our services. It's of no issue, though. I can't imagine anyone able to form sentences after such an ordeal. I gave the man my bed in the captain's quarters, and I plan to get to the bottom of things. Seeing such travelers so soon after one another is a rarity on a regular expedition, but in such a harsh climate, it has to be related. I'll write again once our slumbering friend awakens, and I shall send you his tale. Dear sister, our friend has awoken. It seems as if the man was on a quest to bring justice to the man who has wronged him. I asked him for more details, and he promised he would tell me his entire story. But it appears his tale shall have to wait over the next coming days. From this point on, our point of view is revoked from the sailor and placed into the hands of the title character as he recounts his tale. From the very beginning, I was a very blessed child. I never truly had to struggle much, as I was born with very wealthy parents. We went on extravagant trips around the world. I had truly wonderful friends. I was with the love of my life. Everything from my early life was something truly to admire. My parents met much like many others at the time. My father, Alphonse Frankenstein, was helping out a friend who had recently fallen upon hard times. A man by the name of Beaufort. At the time, the man was a rather wealthy merchant. Unfortunately, prosperity is not something everyone is bound to have, and my father, not wanting to see the legacy of his friend soiled, dedicated his life to taking care of his friend's heir, his daughter, Caroline. Over the years, my father and Caroline would grow close until they decided to wed. The result of which would, of course, be me, their eldest son, Victor. Several years passed, and during one of our annual trips to Italy, we came across a family of peasants. They were messy and rather unkempt. That is, all except for one. A beautiful girl, about equal to myself in age. She had long, blonde, curly hair and a smile that could brighten up even the darkest of places. I was enchanted. A flower of such beauty did not deserve to grow up in a patch of weeds. It deserves to grow in those beautiful and pristine gardens. It seems my father had a similar belief as he asked the peasant girl's father who she was. The man explained how he, in fact, was not the child's father, but simply the one to take care of her, as she was born a noble but lost all her wealth and family. Father could not let such a heinous act go and decided to make things right, adopting the girl, and this girl would come to be my future fiancé, Elizabeth Lavenza. Life carried on like normal for a period of time. Elizabeth and I would regularly go out and play with our childhood best friend, Henry Clerval, a ray of sunshine in a beautiful forest. The three of us were inseparable. By the age of 13, I made a discovery that would change the course of my life forever. While exploring my home in Geneva, I found myself inside one of my father's libraries. Being the curious soul I am, I decided to take a look inside. To my surprise, I found a world of what seemed like magic. I was learning how the world worked, what makes life, what makes up the earth, and how it all could interact and play off of each other. I had discovered something truly magnificent. I had discovered science. While the book held millions of answers to questions I had, there were still several questions that had yet to be answered. As such, I went to my father, believing that he must know the answers. While he was able to answer a few of my questions, while others left him puzzled and stumped, this would have come as a disappointing loss to many, but this was simply the beginning for me. If no one knew the answers to some of life's questions, I decided I would be the one to find those answers. I would become a great scientist. No, I would become the greatest scientist this world had ever seen. I began to study my heart out every single night. Despite being given the best education, I still yearned for more. Deciding I would go to university and learn all I could about life, nothing could slow me down. Nothing could slow down my pursuit of knowledge. Or at least, I thought. I had made preparations to go to college in just a few months, but my plans were brought to a drastic stop. My mother had contracted scarlet fever and had little time to live. I didn't know what to do. There was nothing I could do. I wanted to help my mother, but if a trained professional physician couldn't help her, what chance were there that I would be able to do anything? All I could do was wait. All I could do was wait and watch as my mother passed away before me. I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sorry, Mom. I wish I could have been there and done more for you. I love you, Mom. And I always will. Unfortunately, soon after my mother's passing, I had to leave for university. I was leaving behind my family in their time of need. I felt horrible. They needed me. I was reconsidering going, but my dear Elizabeth came and spoke to me. Victor, you have so much to offer the world. Too much for you to simply stay here and take care of us. Go out and learn all you can. Just remember to come home and visit from time to time. Elizabeth's words helped to remind me why I wanted to go study in the first place. Reminded of my purpose, I got into the stagecoach and I was on my way. Originally, I was going to head off to university with my friend Clerval by my side. However, his father wished for him to succeed him as a merchant. As such, Clerval was forced to stay behind. For the first time in my life, I was truly alone. My spirits did not remain low for long, however, as once I arrived, my excitement for science was once again put into full throttle. I took classes on every aspect of science the school had to offer. along with a healthy bit of mathematics to keep me well-rounded. My determination and drive was spotted by a professor by the name of Dr. Waldman. This man was ecstatic to have such an enthusiastic student to help him advance far above all the others in my class. By the end of my first year, I had acquired the knowledge of one reaching their masters. I was truly on the track to discovering something great. By the end of my first year, I started thinking. Many of Professor Walden's lectures introduced us to the nature of life. These lectures sent me down a path thinking about how life works and how, one day, life must end. Well, why is it people die? How much easier would life be if we did not need to worry about such a horrific fate? These thoughts piled onto my already depressive mindset on death due to the circumstances involving my mother, led me down a path that would eventually define my legacy. I was determined. I would create life, and in turn, I would conquer death. This process took me the better part of a year as I worked towards building my creature. I perfectly planned out what I would do to reanimate this being. I determined that if I was going to create anything, it would be a perfect being. Tall, beautiful, well-spoken, everything that defines perfection. I would create a god. Over the next month or two, I managed to acquire the tools to create my being, although my process for acquiring these elements may have been less than moral. I could not think about it. Science moves forward, and so will I. I stitched it together and took a step back. I had done it. My creation, it was perfect. An 8-foot-tall giant, perfectly proportioned with long, beautiful, flowing hair down its back. He was a true Adonis. Truly, this would be the perfect being. This would be the being of the new world. One who doesn't fear death. One that conquers all that we have yet to. He was my first. This was my first. This was my Adam. He was complete. All except for the most important part. As such, I began the process of reanimating him. By the time I had finished, I was exhausted. I waited for my Adam to move. Nothing. I continued to wait. Still, nothing. I can't even describe my level of disappointment. It was immense. I took a few steps back as I wanted to go over my notebook one more time. Maybe I'd run the calculations wrong. I knew my math was correct. Everything was correct for this. It should have worked. Why is he not alive? Why did I waste all this on nothing? As I began to fall into sorrow, I heard something creeping up from behind me. Something had stood up and was waiting behind me. I shot around to see what it was, and to my surprise, it was my creature, standing there, staring down at me. This should have been a moment of triumph for me, but something was wrong. While his size, hair, proportions, they were all intact, it was massively overshadowed by what he was not. This creature was not the perfect god I had hoped for. This creature's skin, it was taut and rough. It looked like it was moments away from tearing. The creature's skin was covered head to toe in sores and rashes. By far the worst part was the eyes. The creature's eyes were horrible. It was a sickly, disgusting yellow. They were somehow filled with water and shriveled up at the same time. Frankly, I was shocked the creature was able to see me in any way. This was no Adam. This was a demon. Instead of bringing to life the pinnacle of humanity upon this world, I had brought a being that displays the horror and malice of mankind. All I could do was scream in terror. This must have frightened off the daemon as he quickly fled my dorm out into the woods. A wave of relief washed over me, and as my adrenaline wore off, I passed out. I spent the next month or so alone in my dorm room. The process of creating the daemon had turned me into a shriveled husk of my former self, and seeing the true creature had only made things worse. I barely had the strength to do anything. The only thing I managed to do was throw out all my supplies and equipment, feeling that my use of science would create another daemon. I had become horrified of my studies. My solitude was lifted one day when I heard a knock on my dorm room door. I went to see who it was, and I was honestly overjoyed to see. It was my old friend, Henry Clairval, standing behind it. My friend had arrived at the university. Why or how, I was unsure, but regardless, I was glad to have my childhood companion back. "Victor, my father has finally allowed me to study. How are you, old friend?" He would ask me, but I did not respond. I did not wish to burden my friend with the knowledge of the daemon. Regardless, it seems Clairval was able to put it all together without me even saying anything. "Victor, what has become of you? You look awful. We must get you in better condition." From then on, Clairval dedicated himself to nursing me back to health. While not working on his own studies, that is. Luckily for me, Clairval was far more interested in the liberal arts than science, so I would not need to confront the objects of my trauma. Clairval knew better than to ask me about the details that put me into such a condition. Regardless, he still tried to get me back on my feet, taking me to one of my former lectures. However, the mere sight of a Bunsen burner sent me into a panic. I was unable to calm myself, and I was only able to remain myself due to the help of Clairval. He truly was my light at the end of the tunnel. Over the next few months, Clairval nursed me, and I was getting back on my feet when I received a letter from Elizabeth asking for us to return home and visit. I felt as if I was healthy enough to travel, so Clairval and I made plans to return home. However, our journey was interrupted due to a torrent of poor weather. We would have to wait in order to return home. Our travel plans were pushed forward, however, once we received a second letter from Elizabeth. It was one of panic and dismay as Elizabeth recounted some truly horrible news. My younger brother, William, had been murdered. It also seemed Elizabeth felt responsible, as the day prior, she had given William an antique locket of hers. The locket was not found on William's corpse, and as such, he must have been murdered so that someone could take it. With this in mind, the weather would not keep us from home. Clairval and I got into a carriage that very day and made our way back to Geneva. Trip back was agony, harking back to the memories of my mother. The idea of losing a second member of my family was one I could not bear. And what didn't help was the carriage that we were riding in. I am not normally a claustrophobic person, but distress building up in me felt as if the carriage was closing in. We were only 2 hours from reaching home, but I couldn't take it. So I decided to stop the carriage and I took a step outside. While stopped in the middle of the forest, I decided to go for a quick walk. The intense rain would normally dampen my spirits, but now, for some reason, it felt good. The cold water going down my skin felt as if the stress was being washed away. Maybe for a small moment, I was at peace. That is, for a moment. The stress came back to me in a flash as the lightning came. A bolt struck and it lit up something that sent a chill down my spine. The light illuminated a massive silhouette with long flowing hair blowing in the wind. But when it flashed a second time, it was gone. The daemon was no longer in my sight. Was I imagining this? No, I couldn't be. This was real. He had once again found me. A million thoughts and theories went through my head, wondering what he was doing here. However, only one truly stuck in my mind. Did you kill my brother? Did you kill my brother? I muttered under my breath. He couldn't have. How would he have known? There's no way he could remember me. Regardless, nothing could shake the idea that the brother I had known had met his end at the hands of the daemon. I panicked and rushed back to the carriage and instructed the coachman to go. Now! We took off on our path. Victor, is everything okay? Please, calm down. Everything will be fine. And Clerval had no knowledge of what I had seen. He must have been trying to comfort me, believing the cause of my stress was simply my brother. Henry, this was something even you could not make bright. We arrived in Geneva and were immediately greeted by Elizabeth and my father. Victor, I'm so glad to see you again. I can't begin to explain the horrors we have experienced since you've left. Elizabeth said as she ran towards me and embraced me. I'm sorry, Elizabeth. I never should have left, but fear not. I will be remaining in Geneva for the foreseeable future.
It's good to see you again, son.
I hope your studies have gone well.
Father's age had begun to catch up with him as he had grown sick. Nowhere near the end of his term, but still not in the best health. Over the next few days, I did what I could to comfort and be with my family until eventually the local officials had informed us that they had captured my brother's killer. As we were taken to the building containing the fugitive, I began to panic. Would I see the daemon? Will my secret be discovered and will I be deemed a madman? We entered the cell and in there, to our surprise, we found something very familiar to us. Justine, a woman my father had taken in similarly to Elizabeth. She was treated like a sister to me and was effectively the one who raised William. There was no way such a sweet woman would kill my brother. I couldn't even believe she could physically achieve something like that.
We found her passed out in a nearby barn, and this was in her pocket, stated the officer as he pulled something out of his pocket.
It was a very familiar-looking pendant. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I felt like it was on the tip of my tongue, but before I could fully figure it out, I heard Elizabeth gasp.
That's my locket. Why would...
She said, concerningly turned towards Justine. I'm telling you, I don't know how that got in there, shouted Justine.
Yeah, tell that to the devil when you see him, stated the officer.
Then he left, leaving Elizabeth and I to talk with Justine. Justine then began to talk. She told us how she was playing in the forest with William when William went missing. She looked for him, but when she eventually found him, he was dead, strangled, the fear of which caused her to pass out. When she awoke a few days later in a nearby barn, we Mysteriously, she had the locket on her person. This sent Elizabeth to tears, as she believed the woman she saw as a sister was going to be executed for murder she did not commit. And frankly, I agreed.
You didn't kill William, I stated.
This perked up Elizabeth, glad that I didn't think Justine was guilty.
I know for a fact that you were not the one who killed my brother, and I can't...
I began to trail off as a thought came to my mind. I could clear Justine's name. If I revealed to everyone that the monster of my creation killed my brother, all that would do was make me seem crazy, or worse, guilty. If I were to come clean, I could be hung.
Victor, how? If you know a way to prove Justine's innocence, just say it!
Elizabeth asked me. I'm sorry, Justine. I believe you. I know you didn't kill William, but there's nothing we can do. You will have to serve the punishment for something like this. Elizabeth couldn't hide her emotions. She looked as if she wished to take her sister's place, but there was nothing she could do. Justine, on the other hand, she remained strong. Or at least, she tried. She knew the end was near, but did not want to make us cry. She maintained a strong exterior as we left her cell, but just as she thought we were out of earshot, I could hear her begin to cry. Over the next few days, we were forced to sit through the trial, false confession, sentencing, and worst of all, the execution of our dear Justine. Unlike all the other deaths in my life, which had felt as if I was sinking deeper and deeper into increasingly cold water, causing me to be numb to the regular world, this one felt different. It was as if I was stabbed in the heart. My anger at the daemon burned as the pain in my heart increased. He had taken away two important people in my life. There was nothing I could do about it. I was at this creature's complete mercy. While my pain was immense, it looked to be nothing compared to that of Elizabeth. My love, she had always had the soul of a poet, able to see the light in everything and everyone. All the colors were so vivid when you saw them through her eyes. But the deaths that befell us, all the colors in the world faded to her. The world was no longer a rainbow, but simply that of black and white. I had never seen the light drain out of someone's eyes while they still lived, yet here it was happening to my dear Elizabeth. All this death and destruction became the only thing in my life. I needed to clear my mind of it. As such, I requested to my father that he give me a few months to travel and climb Mont Blanc. It had always been a place of relaxing sincerity. It was always a place where I could clear my head. Father was reluctant as he wished for me to remain and was hoping I would wed my dear Elizabeth. When he saw how much I was hurting, he allowed me to go off on my travels. As I made my way to the peak of the mountain, I felt the cold winter air against my skin. It felt as if 1,000 tiny needles pierced against my skin. It was uncomfortable, borderline painful, but after all I had experienced, it was nice to at least feel something, as I had become numb to all that around me. Once I reached the peak, I took off my hood and fully allowed my hair to embrace the wind. It felt good. I was finally feeling something akin to relief. I thought for a moment, just maybe, I would be fine. I would get myself through this, through all these atrocities, but then I heard something. What was it? I heard something behind me. It was nothing at first, just the sound of something stepping in the snow. I simply assumed it was just some animal up here, so I paid it no mind, after all. But soon after that, I heard a twig snap. Normally, no real issue, but
This sounded somewhat closer. I turned around and stared into the nearby woods. I could see something back there, just a foggy silhouette. But as the noise increased, so did the size of the shadow. My heart was beating a mile a minute, not out of anticipation for what was in the woods, but fear that I had already known what it would be. The daemon had once again found me. I turned to run, but he was too strong, too fast. If I tried, I would not get very far. All I could do was stand my ground and fight.
It's been a long time since we last met, hasn't it, Victor?
I heard those words come from the direction of the daemon, but I couldn't believe it. He was the equivalent of a wild man. What? How does he have the ability to speak? What are you? I called out to the monster.
If there's anyone who doesn't need an explanation for that, it's you, Father. I am your creation. I am the one that doesn't fear death. One that conquers all humanity has yet to. I am the first. I am your Adam. Today, I awoke in your lap. It's the worst moment of my life. I was cold, tired, scared, looking for something, someone to help me. I reached out towards the one who may be able to help me. The man who had brought me to life. He was effectively my father. Fathers have a duty to their children. But that was not the relationship I had with you, as you shunned me, screamed at me, forced me out. It was a pure stroke of luck that I grabbed a coat, as it would be the only thing around me that could keep me warm in the cold, unforgiving world. I fled out into the nearby woods. At first, I was unable to process anything around me. I had no memories, no knowledge. I had no information to fall back on. I spent the next few weeks in the forest, learning to slowly understand my surroundings. I learned to understand the chirping of birds, smell of the flowers, taste of the fruit, the color of the leaves, the heat of the sun. The longer I lasted, the more information I was able to understand. For a small moment in my life, I was happy. Creatures of nature knew nothing of my irregular appearance, and viewed me as any other being in the area. I was one of them, but my size dictated I could not fully sustain myself on forced rations alone. I made my way east, hoping to find more food. I was successful, as I found a nearby cottage, not truly aware what sight of me would do to the average man. I made my way into the cottage, hoping to find some food. The resident began to panic, throwing what he could at me and then running off. A greeting I'd become all too familiar with. This was the second time someone had run in terror from my visage. I was beginning to learn this was not a one-off. If the beings closest to me were afraid to look upon me, there must be something wrong with me. If there was one good thing about the man running off, he left his cabin. This granted access to his stockpiles of food. More importantly, it gave me knowledge of the object residing below a piece of food. Bright yellowish-orange substance. As I got closer to it, I learned that the substance would create heat. It was as if I had my own personal sun. I was just as curious as I was confused. I reached out my hand to feel it, and I quickly jerked it back. The substance has hurt me. But if it was violent, why had this man kept it in his house? I looked to the food above it. A large piece of meat. Seems that the substance had prepared the food in a sort of special way. Taking a bite of it was nothing like I ever experienced. That's how I learned to fire, the benefits, along with the dangers of it. I remained in the cabin for a while as I made my way through its supply of food. The fire was of great benefit, as I was able to cook the food and everything would taste better. I learned to care for it, learning that wood was its fuel source and wind to tell me that air helps to fan the flames. I was never gonna let this fire die out, as long as I still needed it. Eventually, I once again ran out of food and was forced to venture out into the world. Although, this time, I was not forced to simply wander in a random direction. The camp I had taken shelter in was in the outskirts of a town. Once again, when entering the town, I was forced to confront the horror of my appearance. These people once again began to act in terror at the sight of me. But this time, they did not simply run away. Many of them threw stones. All my life was not in any danger, and my skin was nowhere near pierced. My soul was another matter. I was sick of this treatment. What was it about my visage that gave people such visceral reactions? I did not choose to be born as this, yet they treated me as if I murdered their family. The sadness of this treatment had long passed. I was getting angry. But what was there for me to do? I couldn't do anything about their hatred. It was just something I was forced to live with. I came across another cottage on the edge of town. Not wishing to bear the force of the occupant's anger, I made shelter in a little hut off the side of the home. Here I was able to take the food I needed without being detected. The home was made up of four people. A wise, blind old man, a strong young man, and two young women. It seemed that one of those women was not able to understand the words being spoken by the other three, and the young man was trying to teach her. Luckily for me, I was able to catch all those lessons which, over the process of a few months, I gained the ability to read, write, and speak. I also came to care about this family. They did not have much in life, but were satisfied with their lives. I wanted to help the people who had inadvertently helped me so greatly. I would commonly exit my hut and go hunting, taking a small amount of the game for myself, leaving the rest for the family. I would also go out and chop firewood for them. I felt as if I was appreciated. It was as if I had a family of my own. Eventually, I got bold. I decided I was sick of simply observing. I wished to interact with this family, and I had the perfect way to do it. The patriarch of the family was a blind old man. He would not be able to see me. Judge me. I suppose if I met him, I may be able to make a friend. The next day, when the young man and the two women left the house, I made my move. I walked up and knocked on the door. The old man greeted me, and my plan seemed to have gone off perfectly. I was able to hold a normal conversation with the man. I was able to tell him about what I'd done for his family, and how much they mean to me. Unfortunately, I was so engrossed in my first ever discussion that I was neglectful at the time, as the other three members of the family entered the cottage. To my horror, they saw me, and the reactions, unlike the father, were the old reactions I had become accustomed to. I ran. I knew if I was to let my emotions take hold of myself, it would have hurt the people I cared for, even if they didn't know it. They were important to me. I didn't want to see them suffer. So I simply ran away. For now. The next day, the family began to spread the word of the monster that attacked their father. This caused my emotions to reach their boiling point, and when all four residents were away, I burned down the cottage I'd called home for so long. At that time, I went back to living in the woods alone. While I was much more adept at survival, I was far less content in my life. My time with the blind man and his family had taught me many things. Most importantly of all, it had taught me the importance of companionship. I was alone in this world. There was no one who could understand. I had one wish above all. I want to love and be loved. The next month was a blur in my mind, with only two significant events took place. As I wandered through the woods, I came across a little girl going for a swim. I noticed that she was unable to keep herself afloat and had passed down the water. Despite my negative interactions, I still had hope that someone would be able to overcome my visage. As such, I dove in and pulled the child out of the water. However, as I was carrying the child out, a man, who I assumed to be her father, arrived and mistook my actions. It seems he believed I had attacked his child. Trying to defend his daughter, he pulled out a long stick. Pointed it at me and pulled a small piece of metal on the bottom of it. I was confused. And suddenly, without being able to see anything, I looked down at my chest, just left in my heart. I saw a hole in which my blood began to pour out. It was a horrible sensation. Similar to when I had stuck my hand in the fire. That pain ended when I took my hand out and dunked it in water. The fire of this spread throughout my body, focusing in that hole it had originated. That was my introduction to humanity's most powerful weapon, the gun. The second important moment during this month came when I looked carefully at the coat I've worn this entire time. I looked in the pocket, and had a piece of paper in it. I read it, and it said, "Property of Victor Frankenstein." Victor Frankenstein. Is he the man who placed me in such a horrible life? Why would he do such a thing to me? If he was going to simply abandon me, why would he create me? I can't truly explain why, but the knowledge of my creator simply increased the great hatred in my soul. If this Frankenstein did this to me, he must suffer consequences tenfold. I continue to wander, surviving off the land as best I could, hoping to stumble upon someone who could see past my face, although hopes were low. Eventually, while walking through nowhere in particular, I came across a child, looked to be about 7. He was stumbling around, appearing to be lost. Initially, I simply planned to walk away, leave the child be. I was sure he'd be just like the rest, angry, corrupt spirit, wishing to do harm to one due to their appearance. Although, in the back of my mind, I had a thought. This was a child, someone untouched and uncorrupted by the evil of this world. If anyone would be able to accept me, it would be this boy. I approached the child, asking if he was lost or needed any help. As expected, however, the child stuttered and feared my image. "Get back, you horrid beast. You do not know who I am." I tried to tell the child I meant him no harm. I simply wished to help him. But it was no use. The child feared me, as all humans did. I took a step back. I was about to walk away.
"That's right. Back away. No child of Frankenstein should ever be seen with such a creature."
That name, my creator. This child is connected to my creator. Hearing this caused something to snap within me. I lashed out towards the child and I had done something I could not take back. I had the blood of the child on my hands. I was horrified. What I had become. This was not who I was. I was made for better things than this. This felt wrong. Felt evil. Felt good. I can't truly explain it, but something about my actions had lifted my spirits. I knew my actions were wrong, but something about it. For as long as I had lived, all I had known was fear and terror. I was a helpless victim in a world that despised me. Finally, I had taken back some of the power. I may not have the power to seize people's fear, but I had the power to hurt those who hurt me. Soon a woman came by and discovered the body of the child. Luckily for me, it seems the shock and fear caused her to pass out. I took the necklace out of the child's body, placed it in the woman's pocket, brought her to a nearby barn, and I left, hoping I'd run into you again, Victor. I had planned to speak to you that night in the storm, but it seems you got back in your carriage before I could properly introduce myself.
I was speechless. This Damon had taken the life of my poor brother, and all it had to say was what? That it had found a new sense of self? What is it you want from me?
You made me like this. You created a genetic defect and just threw me into the trash. You owe me for all my suffering. As such, I come here to make you an offer.
Like hell I would ever do a favor for someone so vicious. The suffering I caused you could never match the pain you've inflicted upon my heart.
You abandoned the equivalent of a deformed newborn baby into a world of neglect, pain, and hatred, all because you did not get my eye color right. Do not speak to me on pain. I assure you, you know nothing of my suffering.
Speak your request, Damon. The sooner I hear it, the sooner I can turn you down and remove you from my life.
My request is simple. There is no one in this world who is able to understand me. As such, I am eternally alone. No matter my actions, I will always be treated with fear and anger. Make me a companion, someone able to understand my suffering. You do this one act of kindness, I promise you, I will truly vanish from your life. My companion and I shall flee the continent, never to be heard from again.
The creature's request intrigued me. Despite his horrid actions, I cannot say I don't understand his struggle. Truly, I am able to see the pain of being alone in the world. While the creation of one daemon made me fully regret my knowledge of science, is it possible that one more experiment could end all my worries forever? Fine, monster. You have yourself a deal. As I rushed back home, I pondered the morality of what I had planned to do. Truly, the implications of such an act would be dire, but my stress, fear, and anger over what has presided surpassed any ideas as to why this may not have been the best plan. I arrived back home immediately and went to my father. Instantly, he was able to tell something was wrong. Son, is everything all right? You seem more troubled than when you left. My family had already been dragged through the mud enough. They did not need to be wrapped in my turmoil. I'm fine, Father. I simply need more time to grieve. Would you please allow me to take a few months and head to England? If I wished to do something so heinous, I had to do it away from home. I didn't want anyone I loved to be at risk of the daemon anymore. Although Father was suspicious of my sudden wish to travel abroad, he granted me my request and allowed me to venture off to the United Kingdom. As I boarded the boat that would take me across the English Channel, I was surprised to hear an all-too-familiar voice. Victor! Victor, don't think you can go off on vacation and leave your best pal out of it. It was Clerval. I suppose my father asked him to come and keep me in good spirits. While I appreciate the sentiment, I did not wish for someone I considered my best friend to be caught in the crossfire of my vicious feud, although I was sure I could keep my friend safe. I just needed to keep him away from my true intentions. Once arriving in England, Clerval began to enjoy himself to the fullest. He wished to try all the foods, see all the sights. He became the true embodiment of a tourist. It was embarrassing, borderline humiliating. But that's why I loved Clerval. He had the perfect sense of self. He had lived his life for no one but himself. I was just happy admiring my friend from afar. On several occasions, Clerval tried to involve me in his antics, and while I loved spending time with my friend, I knew in the back of my mind that I was just prolonging the inevitable. The longer I waited, the higher the risk of the daemon growing impatient. Eventually, I knew the time had come to bid farewell to Clerval. I told my friend that I needed to travel to Scotland for a few days. No matter how much he wished to join, I demanded that I do it alone. It was clear that this whole time, Clerval was hoping to cheer me up. Unlike all the others, he was there after the creation of my greatest enemy. He nursed me back to health in my darkest hours. He had effectively done all he could to walk by my side, except to meet the creature himself. But this was the final leg of my journey. I know I need to walk it alone. From that moment on, I was off on my own, or at least, it would appear. Due to the nature of my travels, I knew that the daemon was behind every corner. If I tried to run, he would be there. If I tried to trick him, he would be there. There was nothing I could do to escape him. I simply had to follow the monster's demands. I arrived in Scotland and entered a small shack that I had recently purchased. For the next month or so, this would be my home, my lab. I would bring life here and end my turmoil. I entered the building and found inside all the ingredients needed to recreate my experiment. It seemed the daemon had grown excited over gaining a friend and took care of the less pleasant parts for me. I would be grateful if it wasn't so awful. I began to create, wasting away as I had done the first time. However, unlike my experiment prior, my stress, anxiety, and lack of personal care was not due to my sense of pride or love for what I once saw as an art. It was fear. The fear of the ones I love being hurt. The fear of recreating the greatest mistake of all. It was the one emotion that could not get through my mind. Finally, after much pain and torment, I had done it. I had created a companion for the creature. She shared many physical characteristics with the first: height, proportion, hair. As she kept all positive traits, as few as they may be, I believed she would most likely retain all the negative elements that made up the creature. It took much more out of me to create my greatest failure once again, and as such, the physical toll it took was leagues higher than the first time. I had truly deteriorated. My exhaustion felt as if I could pass out any moment. My ribs and bones were clearly visible through my skin. The bags in my eyes hung down to my nose. My hair had grayed to the point where my age was indiscernible. I looked older than my father. Finally, it was over. No matter the toll it took, it was done. I took a step back to view what I had made. Was it to admire what I had done? No. There was nothing admirable about what I had spent so long doing. I created a woman that would stand alongside my creature. This would be my Eve. A being made to stand alongside Adam. They would be natural companions. At least, that was my initial thought. But what if I'm wrong? Simply placing a woman in front of the daemon does not mean that they will like each other. Then what? Would I have two monsters wishing to do harm to my family? Or worse, would they become too close? Then what? Will I have inadvertently become responsible for a race of beings that hates humanity and all it stands for? If the demon and his companion reproduce, their offspring will become virtually unstoppable. In my mind, both of these hypotheticals were far worse than the situation I had already been dealing with. I had to scrap this plan. Far quicker than I had created it, I began to destroy all I had worked for. Until all that was left was a mangled corpse. For a moment, a shred of relief washed over my face. This was all over. Although, I was quickly reminded of my fear when an unwanted guest entered the cabin. I didn't know what to do. I wished to get as far away from the door as I could. I was sure the unwanted guest was here to end my life. But if I pressed myself up against the cabin, I would find myself pressed up against what surely must be a crime against nature. Before I would decide what I would do, the door was tossed open and in stepped the daemon. He hoisted me up by the collar with such ease, you would assume he was holding a baby. I was filled with a sense of mortal terror and a strange sense of pride over my creation's strength.
I have but one request, and this is how you treat it. You may believe you have suffered, but trust me, there is much more that can be done. All you care about will come crashing down. Remember this, Victor Frankenstein. I'll be with you on your wedding night.
Then the monster vanished into the night. His parting words haunted me deeply. It had seemed the date of my death had been decided. Fear and anxiety rushed throughout my body, yet in a strange way, also a fair bit of relief. Well, no. The idea of my life coming to an end was not something I thought was appealing. I saw the light at the end of the tunnel. If I was to leave this world, the daemon would bear no hatred towards my name, and, in a sense, I would be taking the creature's malice with me, and I know I would be at peace knowing my dear Elizabeth was able to smile once again in this endlessly cruel world. After an exhausting month of backbreaking, blistering, causing labor, I did what I had done many times when I was still in college. I passed out then and there, sleeping in the middle of my workshop. The next day, I began my journey back home. With a new ease of mind, the world stopped seeming so gray and my tunnel vision began to widen again. As my carriage took me through Scotland on my way back to London, when I would once again meet with Clerval. Until now, I was never able to see how beautiful the world was. The ocean seemed so blue, the trees and grass so green. I looked out towards the nearby mountain and I could feel the nice breeze blowing upon my skin. I was able to reminisce about the great adventures I had had throughout my life. All my travels as a child, climbing mountains, exploring cities, tasting food from across the world. It was all beautiful. I wish I could have had these reflective eyes before I knew the date of my death. But I guess I couldn't complain since I'm seeing it now. As I pulled up in London, happy to find my friend once again, I noticed a large group of officers waiting beside my carriage. I opened the door and asked what was wrong and...
Victor Frankenstein, you are under arrest for the murder of Henry Clerval. I discovered exactly what the Daemon meant, but there is much more that can be done. Despite what I had been told, I did not believe it. There were many horrible things in the world, but Clerval... No. This must have been a sick joke. He was my rock. He was the one thing that kept me tethered to this world. One of the two pillars of my life. I can't. No. I refuse to believe it. If I don't see the body, then I refuse to believe he is dead. The officers seemed to indulge in my rantings as they took me to the local morgue, where there was a table. On that table laid a body, covered by a large white cloth. I took a step forward, hesitantly. While I do wish to learn if it's true, I partially wanted to remain in bliss. If I don't look, maybe, it will remain untrue. Maybe. I'll wake up tomorrow and Henry will be there to greet me. It seemed that I was taking too long as one of the officers shoved me forward towards the body. I began to peel back the cloth. Instantly, I saw short, blonde hair. Alright? No big deal. There are millions of people living in this country and thousands of them have blonde hair. I peeled it down further. It was the same eyes. Henry did always say he looked rather generic. I prayed to whatever God would still hear my prayers that this statement would be true. I peeled back the cloth down to his chin and collapsed to my knees. It was Henry. At least I don't know if it truly was because of the Daemon. There was only one way I could find out. I pulled down the cloth far enough to see Henry's neck. It was bruised and purple. Henry had been strangled. This is just like William. You bastard. He truly set on removing all that is close to me. Henry, I'm sorry. Sorry, Henry. So sorry. When I next woke, I saw Father standing above me. Son, I'm so glad to see you're still with us. I was so scared we'd lose you. It seemed that in my grief, I had placed myself into a coma for a process of 2 months. During that time, Father and Elizabeth had come to take care of me. Father took care of all the legal issues. At the very least, I would not be charged with the murder of my best friend. I followed Elizabeth and Father back to Geneva. I would further describe the journey home, but I don't remember any of it. Time had become a blur. I felt nothing. Everything had been taken away from me. The monster had ruined my life. I had become the husk of a once great scientist. Victor, we have waited long enough. I believe it is time for you and Elizabeth to wed, stated Father. His proclamation barely fazed me. Marrying Elizabeth had been on my mind since I was a child. At this point, the only thing I could hear was the endless words of the daemon repeating to me over and over in my head.
I'll be with you on your wedding night.
I agreed to Father's request, if only to finally end this all and allow myself to rest for the first time in what felt like a decade. Our ceremony was beautiful. Knowing it was the last thing I would ever experience, I managed to maintain a shred of positivity throughout the event. Great food was served. Father gave a wonderful speech. Elizabeth's dress was beautiful. She was the picture of loveliness. She always was, but all good things must come to an end. And as the wedding festivities began to wind down, I found myself alone with Elizabeth. This would be the last time I saw the love of my life. The last time I truly saw anyone. I embraced her in my arms and said what I could. I didn't have anything planned, so I just spoke from the heart. Elizabeth Lavenza, you truly are the love of my life. Everything about you is just wonderful to me. Your hair, your eyes, your beauty, the way you were able to find the brightest side in any situation. I truly do not deserve such a perfect woman. I know the last few years have been hard. If I could go back and do it all again, I would change everything. If it just meant I could see you smile one last time. I want to tell you, I'm sorry. I won't be around for your future, but it will look bright. Please find some new friends, explore the world, continue the poetry that used to bring so much light into your life. No matter what, I just want you to remember. I love you. I always have, and I always will. Believing I had said my final words to the most important person in my life, I took a step outside, waiting for the monster to overtake me and end it all. I waited and waited. Would the creature approach me from the endless dark forest, or would he appear behind me? Every second felt as if the universe could have been reborn and died in it. Everything had been brought to a halt. Was the daemon late? Or was my panic taking the best of me? I was sure he would arrive to end me any moment. When I heard something, a crash from inside and a scream. Elizabeth's scream. I rushed inside, fearing the worst, as the creature was not trying to end me. But take Elizabeth from me. No. He couldn't. His fight was with me. There was no purpose in a senseless act of violence like this. I ran into the room, and there I saw my worst fear realized. There stood the creature, clutching Elizabeth's lifeless body in his arms. As he stood in the center of the room, glaring at me, it was dark, but I could have sworn the creature had some sort of deranged smile on that twisted face. This was the last straw. The daemon would see his final days by my hands. I would kill this creature or die trying. The creature bolted out of the room and I gave chase. I was not going to let the monster escape. But the further into the woods I got, the further away the creature got, until eventually all I could make out was his footsteps in the mud. I rushed back home to Geneva and made preparations. I would track this creature to the ends of the earth. He will not get away from me. Or at least, that was my intention. Years of chasing, and I never managed to get close enough. The creature was always one step ahead of me. He toyed with me until the last days. Thus the end of the tale of Victor Frankenstein. He chased the creature to the ends of the earth, but in the end came up short. His final days were spent recounting his tale to Robert Walton, with his story ending with Victor's untimely demise. After the death of Victor, the creature he had been chasing for so long boards the vessel, captained by Robert Walton, and gives him a few final words.
So, this monster finally left this world, unable to take his vengeance on the creature he deemed such a failure. Know this, Victor. No matter what I had done to you, I was driven to these actions by your single act of abandonment. If only you had taken responsibility, but playing God, maybe you could have lived a long and peaceful life. You forced me to take those lives. Do you truly believe I wish to commit such heinous acts? No, and without your hand in my creation, I never would have fallen down such a path. Rot in hell, Victor Frankenstein. I'll be meeting you there soon.
The daemon then picks up the corpse of his creator, and together they plunge into the cold Arctic water, never to be heard from again. We end our tale with one last letter from Robert Walton to his sister, Margaret. Dear sister, our mysterious visitor has passed on into a place unknown, and the one he had been chasing all this time has arrived to take him away. Something about this man's tale has changed me. My thirst for adventure has subsided, my crew is tired, and we only trudge onward due to my blind optimism. We are turning the ship around, and I shall be home as soon as I can. See you soon, sister. From your brother, Robert. Victor Frankenstein is a haunting examination of the dangers of playing God. Victor spends so much time going against the natures of the world and abandons his creature when it needs him most. These themes and characters would develop and expand into pop culture throughout the decades, allowing us to see the what-if of science, and in turn, creating the first true tale of science fiction. Thank you for watching Retold, Classics Given New Life. Please remember to tune in every 2 weeks for a brand new episode where I break down a story from classic literature for a brand new audience. In the next episode, we will follow the tale of a scientist who discovers the split between good and evil, and the ways he discovers how to exploit it. Next time, we will be covering the strange tale of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. If you have any stories you wish to see covered on Retold, please message the Radio Laurier Instagram. Special thanks to Riley Moore for providing the voice of our daemon. Thank you for listening, and I shall see you all next time.